All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. All right, you guys, on the line, I've got Nicholas J.S. Davies writing again for antiwar.com, this time with the great Medea Benjamin from Code Pink. And you should know that Davies is the author of Blood on Our Hands, The American Invasion and Destruction of Iraq. And he also wrote the chapters on Obama at War and Grading the 44th President, a report card on Barack Obama's first term as a progressive leader. I want to read that. Hey, welcome back to the show. How you doing, Nicholas?
Yeah, I'm doing fine.
Sorry, I couldn't really get through that without cracking up.
I know. I didn't make up the title of the book.
Yeah. No, but I bet, well, what made me laugh was just thinking about what that chapter must have said as opposed to what they were hoping you would have written, I guess. So I bet you it was hilarious in context to the rest of the book was what I was really laughing about there. But I don't know how hard they were going after him or not.
Yeah, it's worth reading that chapter, actually. I felt like I did a pretty good job on that. So,
hell yeah,
anyway.
I bet you did. Yeah. Well, so I was just being interviewed by Aaron Keith Harris of the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus, and one of the main things we were talking about is the war in Yemen and what's it all about, what's it mean, what's the dang deal, how did it get that way? And you just wrote this great piece with Medea Benjamin about this. It's called 2 Years After Khashoggi's Brutal Murder, Why is America Still an Accomplice to Mohammed bin Salman's Crimes? Great question. So first of all, remind us about the Khashoggi thing. Whose cousin is he? And what happened with his murder there? And what difference it made? Because it did seem to make a pretty big difference in D.C., at least there for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, this is always the problem for people like you and me trying to get the attention of the American public and the American media on, you know, the horrors of U.S. foreign policy, because the war in Yemen had been raging on since 2015, you know, with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people being killed and the worst humanitarian crisis in the world, according to relief agencies. And yet, when Saudi Arabia, on the orders of MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the effective dictator of the country, known as the Crown Prince, when he ordered the absolutely brutal, shocking murder of a Washington Post journalist in Istanbul, at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, you know, suddenly the whole world was paying attention to, you know, who is this guy? Who is MBS? You know, how on earth could a major country, a major U.S. ally, commit a horrific crime like this? But, of course, that ignores the fact that that country, with the complicity of the U.S., has been committing some of the worst war crimes in the world. Since 2015, a bombing campaign in which at least 30% of the mostly U.S.-made bombs are falling on civilian targets. Half the hospitals in the country are out of action. Bomb-damaged hospitals, bomb-damaged schools, health clinics, you name it. And, of course, you know, some absolutely horrendous bombings of marketplaces, you know, with dozens of casualties, and the notorious bombing of a school bus, which killed 40 kids and 11 adults. And, you know, and so, but after the Khashoggi assassination, suddenly American politicians started paying attention, and Congress actually managed to pass a war powers bill to try and stop the, at least the U.S. participation in the war. And of course, you know, the in America, our politicians and media play down that role, but the U.S. has played a vital role in assisting in the targeting and satellite intelligence that supposedly guides these strikes that are constantly hitting civilian targets. The U.S. also at that time was doing in-air refueling for the Saudi and Emirati warplanes, dropping those American, mostly American, also British bombs. You know, so after the Khashoggi murder, suddenly Congress started paying attention. But of course, Trump vetoed the War Powers Bill, and he also vetoed a bill in July last year to try and cut off arms sales, because under the Arms Export Control Act and other U.S. laws, you know, the weapons that the U.S. sells to other countries are statutorily not allowed to be used for killing civilians and committing war crimes. So anyway, Trump vetoed that too. And, you know, that's, and the U.S. involvement in this war, you know, continues to this day.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny because on one hand, it's like, well, we'll take whatever attention we can get. They kill this one guy from the Washington Post, and that gets people to pay attention. But on the other hand, it really goes to show what a horrible situation we're in. You just can't get people to pay attention to this same guy killing hundreds of thousands of innocent people, you know, who don't have Washington Post writer status, but whose lives are of infinite value nonetheless. And, you know, I was reminded when you're talking there about Lindsey Graham at the time when he voted for this resolution, and he made it clear that this was personal, that he didn't give a damn about Yemen. I don't want anybody to think that this is about Yemen. This is because this guy, MBS, made me look bad. And so I'm upset because I'm on camera, you know, palling around with him. And now I look bad.
Yeah, God forbid Lindsey Graham should ever say anything or vote against any kind of war or military action or military expenditures ever.
He wanted to make sure you didn't misunderstand that he had any motive whatsoever other than his own ego to protect, you know.
Right.
Amazing. Hey, y'all, check it out. The Libertarian Institute, that's me and my friends, have published three great books this year. First is No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg. He was the best one of us. Now he's gone, but this great collection is a truly fitting legacy for his fight for freedom. I know you'll love it. Then there's Coming to Palestine by the great Sheldon Richman. It's a collection of 40 important essays he's written over the years about the truth behind the Israel-Palestine conflict. You'll learn so much and highly value this definitive libertarian take on the dispossession of the Palestinians and the reality of their brutal occupation. And last but not least is the great Ron Paul, the Scott Horton Show interviews 2004 through 2019, interview transcripts of all of my interviews of the Good Doctor over the years on all the wars, money, taxes, the police state, and more. So how do you like that? Pretty good, right? Find them all at libertarianinstitute.org/books. Hey guys, here's how to support this show. You can donate in various amounts at scotthorton.org/donate. We've got some great kickbacks for you there. Shop amazon.com by way of my link at scotthorton.org. Leave a good review for the show at iTunes and Stitcher. Tell a friend, I don't know. Oh yeah, and buy my books, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and The Great Ron Paul, The Scott Horton Show Interviews 2004 through 2019. And thanks. Hey guys, check out Listen and Think audiobooks. They're at listenandthink.com and of course on audible.com. And they feature my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, as well as brand new out Inside Syria by our friend Reese Ehrlich, and a lot of other great books, mostly by libertarians there. Reese might be one exception, but essentially they're all libertarian audiobooks. And here's how you can get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks. Just donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate. And now, so
I want to go back to that point you were just making. It's one I just made in this interview of me a minute ago about these resolutions. And I always forget which is one is continuing and one is concurrent and whatever. But one of these kinds of resolutions, the president can veto. The other kind, he could not. And he would have been in violation of the law if they had just passed it as a this kind rather than that kind. And of course, also, they could defund every bit of this. No problem. All they have to do is add one thing to the NDAA saying that we will no longer finance any, you know, airstrikes or cooperation with the Saudi war in Yemen or however they want to phrase it. And the whole thing would be over. So I wonder what you think of that. Because you have Chris Murphy, who's absolutely horrible on almost everything, especially one of the worst Russiagate truthers and all that. And yet he seems to really care about this thing. And Bernie Sanders is now one of the most prominent Democrats in the Senate, along with Mike Lee and Rand Paul and a couple of the other Republicans. They seem to really care about this in a way. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's just PR for them because they might as well just ignore it, right? But they don't seem to quite ever go far enough to change anything.
Well, you know, this should have been the low-hanging fruit for these guys because, you know, they're able to minimize the U.S. role, to refer to this as a Saudi war, so without publicizing, you know, just how complicit the U.S. has been in it from day one, you know, they're able to attack it in a way that, you know, they're all, frankly, afraid to attack a war, you know, that is being conducted by a U.S.-led coalition, such as, you know, the complete total destruction of Raqqa in Syria and the near destruction of Mosul in Iraq that also killed tens of thousands of civilians in each case. We're a long way from getting any of these people to really stand up and be counted in opposing, U.S.-led wars. But this one should have been an easy one because they're able to just pin it all on the Saudis and the Emiratis. And you had the dictator of Saudi Arabia who had just exposed himself to the whole world, is willing to, kill and butcher, a Saudi U.S. citizen in their own consulate. We've all got a long way to go and a lot of work to do to try and get our so-called representatives and senators to really show some guts and really show, you know, some principles in defending, you know, the constitutional duty and responsibility of Congress to decide when and if the United States should be at war in any particular country or situation.
You know, did you ever read the thing about how the CIA always preferred his cousin that he arrested and marginalized and replaced as crown prince?
No, I'm not really familiar with that. I'm sorry, Scott.
Yeah, there was a thing about they liked him because he, you know, was so cooperative in their war against Al-Qaeda, which, you know, I guess these Al-Qaeda, but not those Al-Qaeda, something like that. I'm not sure. We're putting them all on a plane to Syria. It'll be great. Anyway, for whatever reason, they really liked him and they put out one good story. It might have been in the Post, though. I don't know. But they put out one good story saying, well, we always liked the cousin. I'm sorry, I used to know his name. It's on the tip of my tongue right now. I want to say Mohammed bin Zayed, but that's the dictator of UAE.
Trying to touch here also on something. We wrote an article a little while ago about a group called UANI, which is United Against a Nuclear Iran, which according to reporting by Eli Clifton for the Quincy Institute, appears to be to a great extent funded by the Saudis and the Emiratis. And yet this is a major, major propaganda operation based in New York City, you know, with all kinds of former U.S. officials involved in it, you know, including John Bolton and including Obama's former former intelligence chief on Iran. And so, you know, the influence of the Saudis and the Emiratis over U.S. foreign policy is completely obscene and corrupt. You know, what they're doing is essentially diverting attention away from the Saudi and Emirati role in all of the chaos and instability and terrorism in that part of the world, and, you know, really falsely blaming Iran as you know, quote unquote, the leading state sponsor of terrorism, which, you know, there's absolutely no basis for whatsoever. So, you know, really, as we said in this latest article, you know, the U.S. set about, under Obama, they set about grooming Saudi Arabia, and in particular Saudi Arabia under MBS, as a new proxy and a new major ally in the Middle East. You know, really perhaps not quite on a par with Israel, but, you know, on a similar basis, that they would sell hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons to them. They would provide training to the Saudi military. And really, this would save, you know, sending American boys to fight in Afghanistan and Iraq and places like that. And, you know, instead, the, you know, the Saudis would take care of our problems for us. And so really, the Saudi-led war on Yemen was the first test of this new American strategy and policy of proxy war, you know, without U.S. casualties, and yet as a means of maintaining U.S. control through these proxies, through Israel, through Saudi Arabia, through the Emiratis, you know, who of course now, you know, Trump has brokered essentially a military alliance between the United Arab Emirates and Israel. And really the absolute practical and moral bankruptcy of this entire policy was really exposed to the whole world through the Khashoggi assassination, mm-hmm. and day in, day out through this war on Yemen, which, you know, I mean, it is simply now one more endless war that neither the U.S. nor the Saudis have any idea how they are going to back their way out of. You know, there are peace negotiations now taking place between the Saudis and the Houthi government of Yemen. They're talking about a prisoner exchange involving, I think, a total of about 1,000 prisoners on both sides. You know, and the fighting has de-escalated somewhat in the past year. It's a bit hard to gauge. The reporting is not good from within Yemen, but certainly there were fewer airstrikes in 2019 than any previous year since 2015. However, you know, the number of airstrikes has now increased by 50 or 60% in the first 8 months of this year. Mm-hmm. So bottom line, the war rages on, as in addition to the hundreds of thousands of actual war deaths, you know, there are at least 100, maybe a couple of 100,000 additional indirect deaths in what really is the, you know, the most serious humanitarian crisis. And now, in 2020, you know, in the midst of this just absolutely horrible situation, the three countries most responsible, the United States, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates, have cut their aid, their humanitarian aid to Yemen, by about 80%. And the U.S. has withdrawn from the World Health Organization in addition to that, which, of course, is a lead agency for providing a lot of health care and supporting, you know, the 50% of Yemeni hospitals that are still functioning. So, you know, the U.S. has reduced its aid from $900 million to $400 million this year. Saudi Arabia and the UAE have virtually cut their humanitarian aid to Yemen to zero, close to zero. So, you know, this, you know, when we actually get a clear picture of, you know, just the absolute devastation and the death toll of the Yemeni people from all of this, you know, it will become clear, hopefully, to the whole world that the U.S. has and its allies have just participated in, you know, really, really, I think what we can quite fairly and soberly call a genocide in Yemen.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. It's a deliberate targeting of the civilian population, not just in this strike or that one, but overall as a strategy. There's no question about that. It's not collateral damage at all. It's, look, let's bomb that apartment complex. That'll be fun. Let's bomb that hospital full of dying children with cholera. But now, so let me ask you about this. You know, the justification for all this in the U.S. or for America's relationship with Saudi, not that they talk about the war, but, you know, a lot of the justification for this is that, hey, you know, MBS is a millennial and, you know, he's a hip new 21st century crown prince who, you know, is opening up movie theaters and letting women drive and liberalizing the society. And aren't you glad that he's not a bin Ladenite? And so, you know, here he is walking around with movie stars and palling around at a deli with Mike Bloomberg in New York. And so, you know, other than that one thing about, you know, killing all those people and his killing of that one guy, what a great, you know, progressive 21st century modernist reformer who deserves our support. What about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that puts him in the same category as Bush, Obama, Trump. You know, really, Americans have been deluded to think that, you know, if our leaders are cool people or, you know, people who we can relate to, you know, it doesn't matter if they're killing millions of people in other countries. And, you know, this is again just the absolute moral bankruptcy of, you know, frankly, the end of the American empire. You know, another article we wrote a couple of weeks ago talking about Michelle Flournoy, who is supposedly Joe Biden's top pick for Secretary of Defense. And we wrote an article titled, "Will Michelle Flournoy Be the Angel of Death for the American Empire?" And, you know, this...
Quite likely.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, this is really what we're looking at. Or, you know, we're trying to get out ahead of it if Biden wins. And we make an issue of this, you know, his appointments and the kind of, frankly, neocon Democrats he's likely to appoint. But you know, we also talked about this as, you know, the end of a decadent empire. You know, we cited, I don't know if your listeners know about John Glubb, who was the British general who commanded the Jordan's Arab Legion, you know, back in the 1930s and 40s. And in his retirement, he became quite a historian and a writer, and he wrote a little book called The Fate of Empires. in which he looked at, you know, the dozen or so major empires of world history and concluded that not one of them had lasted more than 250 years and that they all went through a sort of, he defined six phases of empire, and the last one is the age of decadence and decline. And really, you know, he wrote that back in the 1970s, but you look at, if you look at the way he described that in the cases of other empires, the U.S. just fits right into that that picture. You know, the level of absolute systemic corruption in our whole political life, you know, elections driven completely by money and the power of wealth to control politics, mm-hmm. and the, you know, the absolute, you know, and the country just being riven, as we saw in that debate the other night, by, you know, just absolutely, really, you know, superficial but deep political hatreds, you know, focused on complete rubbish in most cases on both sides, yeah. but, you know, absolutely visceral, deep, deep hatreds, you know, dividing the population. And, you know, this, so we asked in the article, you know, how are we going to transition from being a declining, decadent empire to a brighter post-imperial future? And, you know, what would that look like? And, you know, but
should have voted Ron Paul in 2008, pal.
Yep, right.
I'll tell you what, it's too late now.
So really, you know, that's the kind of thing that our politicians should be talking about now, and that's what Americans should be thinking about now, is how do we move on from here? Yeah. How do we move on to be a peaceful, sustainable country, you know, with shared prosperity for all our people and you know, humane policies towards our fellow human beings around the world?
Well, I'll tell you what, Nicholas, for people who really think that worse has got to come before it gets better, the collapsitarians and so forth, I think Michelle Flournoy is a great pick for Secretary of Defense. If she doesn't get us all nuked, and she has
a great
career of total incompetence.
You know, I mean, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists now has us at 100 seconds to midnight, you know, closer than at the height of the Cold War. Yep. Or the you know.
And she really is absolutely as dumb as she looks. So, and yet it seems like the entire left half and the center of the American foreign policy establishment have invested such confidence in her, right? Like, she's Hillary Clinton and Samantha Power combined somehow, even though all she did was triple and then lose the Afghan war. What feather does she have in her cap anywhere other than she's a woman?
Well, she uses the same trick that Obama used of being a Democrat and yet being absolutely wedded to war, wedded to the war party. And so essentially what she has done in each Democratic administration she has served under, that's Clinton and Obama, was to define, you know, a kind of language and a way that Democrats could talk about war in terms of humanitarian invention, humanitarian intervention, and in terms of defending vital interests around the world, which, of course, if you position your troops and your fleets, you know, across every, you know, every region of the world, then yes, you have vital interests all over the world. But that is precisely what the UN Charter was written very carefully to put an end to, that, you know, defending quote unquote vital interests halfway around the world is no longer a justification for war under the UN Charter and the international laws that were drafted as a result of the two world wars
Except that the people who wrote the law can always break it, and so here we are.
You know, right.
That's it. I'm so sorry we're out of time, because I could talk with you about this stuff for hours, man. You're great, and I love all your articles, and I'm so grateful that you and Medea put out such great stuff and let us run it at antiwar.com the way you do, Nicholas.
You're so welcome, and I thank you guys for publishing it.
Okay, great. Talk again soon, bud.
Yeah, bye, Scott.
Okay, guys, that is Nicholas J.S. Davies writing, usually with Medea Benjamin, at antiwar.com. This one is, the last one was, will Michel Flournoy be the angel of death for the American empire? And then the latest, 2 years after Khashoggi's brutal murder, why is America still an accomplice to MBS's crimes? The Scott Horton Show, Antiwar Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.